It's middle 1920s, and here's Mrs. Theodore Dumoulin listening in her home.
We'd appreciate it if anyone hearing this broadcast would communicate with us how far the broadcast is reaching.
Well, hello, and welcome to another in our series of podcasts as we talk with the names and voices that have been a part of KRKO's 100 years of broadcast history in the North Sound. My name is Tim Hunter, the current inhabitant of the morning show on Everett's Greatest Hits. And this time around, I'm being joined by one of the current owners of KRKO, Mr. Andrew Scott Dahl. And if you stick around, you're going to get the master's class on the history of KRKO.
Assuming they don't turn this off once it starts.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm sorry. We're out of time. Thanks very much. All right. So we're going to talk about the history of KRKO. They have, most radio stations have a Mr. or Ms. So in our case, have a Mr. KRKO. Are you Mr. KRKO, or is there a junta? And those of you studying South American politics can look that up. Who runs this place?
Well, first of all, your original question, there is a former owner of KRKO who would consider himself to be Mr. KRKO.
Okay.
And that person is Sparky Taft.
Mm-hmm.
But I am the licensee along with my brother.
Oh.
So we hold the license to KRKO and to KKXA.
Well, I don't want to give KXA any free publicity here. I suppose I could invoice Stitch. But anyway, back to you, Andrew, Mr. Scott Dahl. How did you and the family get involved with the radio station?
I was in high school at Everett High School.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, my father and a friend of his named Roy Robinson, who had a very successful car dealership mm-hmm. in Marysville.
Oh, yeah.
They, in 1978, had gotten together with a couple other people and created a bank called Frontier Bank.
Oh, yeah.
And those two sat on the board of directors of Frontier Bank. And sometime around 1986, KRKO got into financial trouble. And there were proceedings before a bankruptcy judge. And Dad and Roy were at a board meeting for Frontier Bank. And Dad said, "Why don't we buy the hometown radio station to Roy?" And Roy said that was a good idea. And Roy, because of his sales background, ended up being the one to oversee the station, but they both contributed the money to initially acquire the license and the studios.
So then the Andrew Scott Dahl Morning Show was born?
No, not quite. No, I was in college and had an opportunity to work in a currency dealing room in London for the Royal Bank of Scotland.
Oh, wow.
And while I was there, I actually got offered a job as a ski instructor in the south of France. And I called my parents and said, "That sounded like a pretty great idea." And my father said, "Absolutely not. You're going to come home and you're going to go to work for Roy." And I was a dutiful son at that moment in time and said, okay, I wasn't super crazy about working in London anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So I came home and did as I was told and made plenty of initial mistakes in the process.
Sure. Life is a learning curve. So do you ever have any regrets about not doing that ski thing?
Very much, yes.
Oh, well, it's the end of the
interview. I only wanted to do it for a year, you know, but that would have been a hell of a good time, and I would have been paid for it.
Wow. Are you still skiing?
Yes.
Are you?
Yeah.
Good for you.
Uh-huh.
We tend to break as we get older. That's why I wondered.
Oh, I did. I blew out my ACL, but I'm still skiing on it.
Wow.
Haven't even had it repaired.
Oh, man. Well, okay, back to the radio station. So you've come back, and you're working for Roy. What happened from there?
Roy ultimately made me general manager of the radio station.
Mm-hmm.
And that was arguably premature even when it happened. But I became general manager, and we moved at that time. The radio station operated on equipment that was very old and very broken. So, for example, you'll be familiar with this. Most radio stations in the early 1990s still operated by playing commercials off of a plastic cartridge known as a cart.
Mm-hmm.
And it had magnetic tape inside of it and would spin around, and you'd shove it into a box to play the commercial and hit the button. And so this radio station had all the music on carts, had all the commercials on carts, and had a machine called an Instacart.
Oh my God. I'm watching my life flash before me.
Yeah. And so this machine was a circular wheel with a bunch of cartridges inserted into it for the commercials.
Mm-hmm.
And at 6 o'clock at night, when the last DJ, live DJ, was done inside the radio station, they would flip a switch on the console that you'd use to control the audio. And the audio would start coming from the satellite. And when there was an open window to trigger the commercials, the signal from the satellite network was supposed to start the Instacart machine. The Instacart machine would play 3 minutes of commercials, and then you would automatically go back to the music. But instead, what was happening is the Instacart machine would break so frequently that the network would fire the commercial. The commercials would not play. You would hear 3 minutes of fill-in audio from the network, and usually that three-minute window was being used by the network to feed imaging packages to other radio stations.
Oh, no.
So on KRKO, you would hear WJNZ, here come your liners. The best radio station for the Ohio Valley is WJNZ. And you would hear this in the three-minute break.
Oh, my God.
And not only that, the system was so broken that for most of the night, we were lucky if we ever got what's known as the legal ID, which you're required to do every mm-hmm. hour. And that was also triggered by the network. So it would say KRKO Everett. And we were very fortunate if that played consistently, because that was the only imaging that was ever playing on the radio station overnight. Otherwise, you'd have no idea what radio station you were listening to, other than the fact that you saw 1380 on your dial.
So was this at the old building on Lorimar or whatever it was?
Larimer.
Larimer. I don't know.
Yeah, well, hey, you know.
I'm new.
Tim, you know, this is Everett. You're a DJ in Everett. You got to figure this out, right? So the transmitter site on Larimer Road was constructed in 1958 after mm-hmm. they had moved the transmitter site from the old KEVE location in North Everett on Broadway, where Tower Road exists today.
Oh.
So if someone were to drive north toward Everett Community College on Broadway and they see the sign for Tower Road, the reason it got its name is because that used to be empty farmland, and two towers sat in that location to the west side of Broadway, kind of near where Child Support Services is now.
You had Instacart machines in an old building. You had to make some serious financial investments, didn't you?
Well, we had that, and we had characters, and I certainly don't want to impugn anyone's character specifically, but if you can imagine different sorts of bad human behavior, it all existed inside the radio station, and you know, some of it was actually quite sad, and some of it was astonishing. You know, in one example, I just never imagined, especially coming out of college and being trained for a white collar environment
mm-hmm.
to arrive at work and see someone also arriving to work with a brown paper bag. And that brown paper bag had a liquid in it, and the bag was designed to hide the liquid. So,
oh my God,
that was a real shock. And the radio station had typewriters, and I'd already been writing, you know, term papers on a Mac. So having sales proposals go out from a broken typewriter was also quite extraordinary.
But letters out of magazines.
Yeah. There were individuals in the radio station who cared a great deal about radio, and like Deanne Pilkington, who was the office manager, and Stephanie Ransom, who was the sales manager at the time, and Renee O'Keefe, who was the news director, and even Moose. They all cared very much about radio, and I deeply regret that I didn't have better skills to lead and direct their passion at that moment in time. You certainly learn a lot over the course of time. There is no doubt.
Well, we all get better as we go along, and we do make mistakes and everything else. And woulda, coulda, shoulda, it happens. But radio just, once it gets into your blood, it's a hard beast to shake.
It is. And actually, you know, the other thing that was noteworthy about my arrival there is one of the first things I did was try to understand where the money was coming from. Because the radio station was losing money at that point in time.
Did you ever find that out?
Oh, I did. Yeah. And what was interesting was the radio station was making almost all of its money by trading appliances and meals for airtime and then selling those things on the air at 50 to 70% off.
Wow.
And so the trade drawer was full and the cash contract drawer was almost empty. And it was apparent that just wasn't going to be a sustainable business model, despite the fact that was at that moment in time where the revenue was coming from. And there was a woman named Berdine Bagger, I think, at that moment in time, who was doing the trade program. And, you know, that was another person who cared very much about radio. And it was, you know, the decision to change that program wasn't her fault, but it was not handled well. And we did need to change it. And I'm ultimately glad we did. But, you know, like I said, we really did have some very passionate people. And as you've expressed, once you have an opportunity to be with a microphone and realize that you have a duty to not only be accurate, but to entertain, which is true of news. If it's not somewhat entertaining, no one's going to tune in.
One of the things that I've found out about KRKO since my tenure here is that so many people believed our studio was right off the freeway for so many years. Can you tell that story about how our call letters were right next to I-5, yet we weren't?
In 1997, my brother and I ultimately bought out Roy Robinson's interest in the radio station. Roy was tired of funding losses, and we'd had a couple years of losses. Mm-hmm. And when Craig and I acquired the 50% interest from Roy, one of the discussions that we had internally as a family was what the challenges were associated with being located out on Larimer Road versus having a more visible location elsewhere. And it was at about that point in time that the building that used to be occupied by a radio station called KWYZ, which was known locally as Radio 123, That building was for sale, and the person who owned it was a guy named Bob Brown, and Bob lived out near Lake Stevens. So we approached Bob about buying the building, and he sold it to us. And if you recall the building, the elevator shaft pierced the second floor and was visible above the roof. And the reason for that was the building was originally designed by an Everett architect named Bob Champion to have a third floor. And so our thought was we would construct that third floor on the building because the building was occupied with other tenants. And then the radio station would be able to advertise its traffic reports and everything else because of its visibility. And what we discovered from the city of Everett was that if we tried to build a third floor in that building, they were going to require this very expensive steel exoskeleton for the building.
Oh, wow.
Because the building was constructed prior to the current seismic code. And as a result, it just wasn't feasible to have the studios there. So the next discussion was, well, Dad and Craig had just acquired what was then known as the Everett Mutual Building because of Everett Mutual Bank out of bankruptcy. The building was financed by the AFL-CIO in Chicago, and the people who owed the debt on that defaulted. So the AFL-CIO took it back, and my dad and brother approached them about selling the building, which they initially didn't want to do, and then they did. And through that acquisition process, there was quite a bit of unleased space in the building. And the next discussion was, well, let's put KRKO up on the 14th floor. It's actually the 11th floor, but
go seriously? Figure. I thought it was the 13th floor.
Yeah, well, no, it's actually the 11th if you actually count. You know, garages are 4-5 and 3-4. And
okay.
Anyway, but so the radio station ended up here because of that. You know, it's been a great location, and the nice thing is it's been more readily accessible for all the members of the community that we've been able to help over time, and that has probably been the greatest community value of this asset, has been the different ways in which we've been able to help the different organizations at different points in time.
So what is the thing about, you look at KRKO, the history of your involvement there, what's the thing that you'll look back on, you're sitting in your rocker at the old folks' home, and you'll be so proud of that you did being owner of KRKO, besides our morning show?
I may be focused on more on my adult diaper than I am about that answer, Tim. When I think of the projects that the station has been involved in, the ones that stand out include the campaign in support of the expansion of Providence Hospital, the campaign in support of the privately constructed commercial passenger terminal at Payne Field, and the campaign to encourage the Everett City Council to continue taking funding from the Department of Justice for the Everett Police Department versus rejecting it. And those are examples of the kinds of stewardship, right or wrong, that the Best family used to practice when they owned and controlled the Everett Herald. And the Best family saw the editorial pages as a place to act and advocate on behalf of issues they felt were important to the community. And they did that. And that is something that is sorely missing in a vanilla corporate environment where nobody is willing to take a stand anymore.
Huh. Now it got all heavy.
Well, you asked what I was proud of. I mean, you know.
No. And that's all good. What do you see in the future for KRKO? Again, besides a new morning show.
The future of KRKO is tied in part to the future of how the Federal Communications Commission chooses to treat the AM band. We pioneered the use of digital radio technology in 2014 in testing that we did for an organization known as NAB Labs, which is the technical research entity of the radio industry under the National Association of Broadcasters. Right. And we produced the first all digital transmissions in North America on the AM band across two weekends. And what we learned by that was that AM has the same audio potential as analog FM, if not better. So whatever you drive around and hear in stereo in your car right now, it sounds better. And that our coverage doubled. And that was with less power. And at that time, we were operating with 50,000 watts. So they cut our power back to 30,000 watts to conduct the trials. And we could be heard from Lacey to the Canadian border with crystal clear audio. Like you were right next to the transmitter site. I see that as something that over time is going to facilitate the AM band. I also think that having a lot of AM stations shut down will ultimately help the AM band, because I don't believe, except in limited circumstances, that stations with 1,000 watts can on the AM band can ultimately survive. And it's particularly difficult for stations without 50,000 watts to survive in a suburban situation against major competitors in a market like Seattle. Mm-hmm. And so there will be and continues to be a reckoning nationwide. The AM station count total, the number of AM licenses that exist today, is in decline. Licensees are turning their licenses into the Federal Communications Commission, not even trying to sell their stations. That ultimately will help the band because it will clean up interference. There is arguably too much competition. So making it possible to have a situation where there's a little more sustainability will help through that attrition. And I think for KRKO specifically, the county's growth has been extraordinary. And increasing the coverage made it possible for KRKO to have building and home penetrating density that Seattle signals can't have by virtue of their distance. Mm-hmm. And the county's over 800,000 people now. It'll be 1 million in short order. And I think KRKO's future is inextricably linked to that growth. And the story ahead, despite the challenges the station has had over time, and you really literally could go back to 1922 and talk about all the hurdles this station has overcome, the future for KRKO is ultimately bright. And as I think about what is so powerful about this medium generally, it's storytelling. You could play a sound effect right now of wind blowing and the growl of some predator, and suddenly we've been transported in people's imaginations to the safari in Africa. And it takes very little to create that imaginative effect in people with radio, and it's because of the engagement of the imagination in this spoken word medium that radio is truly one of the most powerful mediums on the planet. Spoken word, music, storytelling, all of that. Granted, radio is a delivery vehicle, so you can have those things on other delivery vehicles like the internet, but the aspect that tends to set this apart is that the transmitter is anchored in a community, and therefore an identity originates because of that, and that is unique and distinct from other delivery vehicles like the internet.
Well, now going back to when KRKO started, when it was born, early 20s, all I know is it was a couple of guys in a garage that started this station.
Well, radio telephony came into its own in World War I, and it was on the heels of World War I that people started to experiment with commercial applications for radio. And so in 1921, when KDKA received its first license from the Federal Communications Commission, which, by the way, KDKA was not the first radio station in the United States. There's tons of evidence to back that up, that Westinghouse PR machine ginned that up, and it stuck. But when they received their first license, KRKO received its license less than 10 months later. So all these stations, there are five in Washington State, and, KRKO is among them. All these stations were within the first 12 months of each other in terms of originally getting licensed. And the Lease Brothers, who had an auto repair shop here in Everett, they occupied the building that used to be occupied by Goldfinch Brothers on 28th and Rucker. 28th and Rucker. And the thing that was unique about that building was there was a whorehouse on the second floor. I suppose you can't call it that anymore.
No, but that's fine.
That's what it was.
We can.
And the radio station was right across the hall.
Best jock lounge ever.
So all the historical discovery I've done on this radio station, the story that stood out the most was that the announcers had to be careful when they cracked the mic lest they hear noises coming from the House of Ill Repute across the hallway.
Well, see, and today people would just think we flipped our format to rap.
Well, anyway, so they had some real problems back then, and the original studios were interesting too, because they were more like a living room. They had a microphone in the middle and couches, and they would bring people in to perform recitals, whether it was members of the community to sing, students from school to come play the violin. And at that point in time, because radio was so new and novel, you could get away with it. But from a programming standpoint, it was today, by today's standards, it would be terrible to listen to. And interestingly enough, they did play some records, but that did not constitute the majority of the programming at that time. And often the records weren't long enough. I mean, there's a reason, for example, that American Pie is referred to by DJs as the bathroom song.
Exactly.
And it was something that was over 7 minutes, but they did not have that on records back in the day. And so very often the DJ could put the record on and then be caught out because the record was up and the DJ wasn't done. So,
wow.
Better make sure you visit the bathroom before your DJ shift. But the Lease Brothers ended up transferring ownership, or at least control, to a person named Lee Mudgett, who was the engineer in the late 1920s. And Lee, by his own account, according to the history, was not really a programmer. He just loved radio. His uncle, ironically, happened to be the one who helped fund Lee's passion for radio and helped him initiate the acquisition. But Lee also continually lost money. And ultimately, that was when the Taft family first became involved in the radio station. Lee tried to sell the radio station to the Totem Radio Network, which also leased time from a station now known today as KJR, ironically back in the day known as KOMO at 950. Mm-hmm. And the Totem Radio Network wanted to get control of KRKO from Lee Mudgett. And Lee tried to go down that road and then decided he got a better offer from the Taft family, and Totem sued at the Federal Communications Commission and tried to get the license revoked. And that it turned out that they were unsuccessful, and the Taft family then did get control of the radio station. And then they operated the radio station until about 1985. But that's when one of the greatest personalities in the history of the radio station came through the doors in Shirley Bartholomew. Mm-hmm. And Shirley Bartholomew was known community-wide as the go-to person for news. And to Shirley's credit, and even after she was completely retired and living in Marysville, she'd call all the time with things she heard from the scanner. And to Shirley's credit, she truly was an accomplished and talented newscaster. And to achieve a role of significance in the 1940s as a woman, mm-hmm. and as a gay person, she was truly a pioneer. And I have consistently been in awe the more I learn about Shirley and what she achieved. And I think Thelma Taft had a lot to do with bringing Shirley into this radio station.
So much history. Boy, you know your stuff.
You follow on to that with people like Dale Good, who was also, yep. another incredible newscaster. Unfortunately, I didn't bring my list of names, but the people who have passed through this door and gone on to bigger and better things has been extraordinary. And the history here is worth extra review. There is no question.
Well, Tom Lafferty has let me know he had time to wash your car, but only one coat of wax. So I'm going to let you go now, but I wanted to wish you and KRKO, all of us, a happy 100th birthday.
Thanks, Tim.
Take care.
Yeah, bye.
KRKO, Everett's greatest hits, celebrating 100 years of serving the North Sound. Thanks for listening.